to the podcast. My name is Thomas J. Sopvet.
And I'm your co-host, Vicky Sopvet.
Which means this is the ooey-gooey s'more that you have all come to know and love, Scaredy Cats.
We're a s'more now?
We're a s'more now, because it's cold outside, and this movie we're covering is about a summer camp.
If it's cold outside, how are we s'mores? S'mores are warm.
No, I'm saying that we're s'mores to fight the cold.
I see.
We're s'mores against the cold.
What a great analogy.
Thank you. I worked really, really hard on it.
You did so good, bud.
The movie we're doing today is Friday the 13th Part 1, which we talked about real briefly, I think, in the last episode.
Well, we said we were going to watch it. That was the extent
of it. Yeah, I think we mentioned that Kevin Bacon's in it, and that was about as deep as we got into Friday the 13th
Part 1.
So, according to the biblical tradition, 13 is an unlucky number because of the Last Supper. That, of course, being because there are 12 apostles and one Jesus.
I would like to point out, though, that that particular story did not start happening until the 15th century.
No. It's very, very, very new. And there's our cat meowing. It's very, very new. In the 19th century, this guy in New York, I wanted to share this story. It doesn't really have a whole ton to do with the movie, but it has to do with the number 13 being unlucky. So basically, he started this club, this fellow in New York named William Fowler, Captain William Fowler, in fact. But he decided to fly in the face of the number 13 being unlucky when he started the 13 Club. He and a few mates would basically go on the 13th of each month to eat at a place called the Knickerbocker Cottage for a 13-course meal. And on the way to the 13th Club, they would pass underneath a ladder with a banner that read, Moruturi te Salutamus, I'm probably butchering it. It's Latin for...
Next time you should let me read all the Latin phrases.
Right, yeah. Latin for, those of us who are about to die salute you, which I thought was absolutely baller.
Yes.
Friday has being married to the number 13 for being unlucky didn't actually happen until 1907 with the publication of Thomas William Lawson's novel Friday the 13th. The book revolves around a dude using superstitions to tank the stock market, and also a hockey mask wearing guy murders a bunch of Wall Street types with a machete. He's played by Christian Bale. That doesn't happen. I was making a joke. You're staring at me like, this does not make sense.
Well, I was wondering. I was like, wow, that's really specific. That was 1907. Did they even have hockey masks in 1907?
No, they didn't. They had good old-fashioned hockey concussions.
Incidentally, do you know what lots of modern authors like Dan Brown like to attribute Friday the 13th to being unlucky to?
What?
So, supposedly, in 1307, I want to say 1307. It's about 1307. King Philip of France, on Friday the 13th, ordered the end of the Knights Templar, and the knights are all rounded up and most of them are executed. And that's why, according to people who write things like The Da Vinci Code, everybody should be afraid of Friday the 13th.
Because Last Supper, yeah, all that stuff.
None of that is actually...
No, none of it's founded in anything. It's all superstition.
Well, I mean, King Philip did order the
capture and execution. But I'm saying that, like... But it's a little strange because there seems to be a lot of cultures that view the 13th number. Although there's a few that it's 7 and a few that it's 9.
Well,
I mean,
13 is lucky in Italy.
Yeah.
17 is unlucky. If you're in China, nobody cares about 13, but God help you if you put 4 in an elevator.
Yeah.
Because the Chinese word for 4 is very similar to the Chinese word for death.
Well, funny enough, this superstition about Friday the 13th actually has very little to do with the series that bears its name. So Friday the 13th Part 1 was directed and produced by Sean S. Cunningham. He went on to produce Jason Goes to Hell, Friday the 13th Part 9, Jason X, which is Part 10, Freddy vs. Jason, which does not get put into the chronology, and the Friday the 13th reboot in 2009. He also produced the reboot of The Last House on the Left in 2009. So he's a pretty important fella in the horror scene. But yeah, the other Friday movies he produced were very different than this one.
Sorry, how many Friday the 13th movies are
there? Oh, there's a lot. I think in total there's got to be like... There might even be 13 now. I don't know. I think there might be 13 of them. Yeah, it's... Well, the movie made... for a budget of, a little over $500,000, it's made to date $59.8 million. So it's like... It's cash cow. So they clearly saw how much money this series was going to make. So, of course, they were going to keep making them because money. So, yeah, directed and produced by him. It was written by Victor Miller, who was only associated with the first Friday film, but he's credited with the creation of Jason and Pamela Voorhees. So he is the guy that made those characters. But he didn't go on until after this one to do anything with them. It stars Betsy Palmer as Pamela Voorhees, Adrian King as Alice Hardy, our final girl, and, of course, Kevin Bacon, and then a whole lot of other people that are actually more important than Kevin Bacon. Kevin Bacon bites it a little early, as far as I can remember, but he's famous, so he gets a shout-out now.
What was his middle name again?
Norwood.
Norwood,
and I will always remember that. So before I jump into factoids about Friday the 13th Part 1, why don't we ask Vicky what Vicky knows about Friday the 13th Part 1?
It's at a summer camp.
Do you know what the summer camp's called?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's at a summer camp. The guy with the hockey mask isn't actually the killer in the first one. It's his mom, I think. You're just giving me a look. Is that not correct?
I didn't want to spoil it.
Babe.
I'm not going to do that.
I think it's Jason's mom, which makes no sense to me, because how is the most recognizable character not the main character in the first movie? But okay, sure, whatever.
Well, not main character, antagonist.
What's the main character?
Not really.
I mean, when people say Friday the 13th, you think about the guy in the hockey mask with the machete.
Because that antagonist is synonymous with the series. But I mean, like, likes Halloween, Laurie Strode's the main character of the Halloween movies.
Is that the one with the like, mask that's, like, long and he has
It's the William Shatner mask painted white. And that's the one with Jamie Lee Curtis in it. That's what the mask is. It was a William Shatner mask,
so
that they painted white.
So it's not the long mask.
No, that's Ghostface. That's Scream. That's a lot later.
Oh.
Man, you're doing so good.
Kate, do you know what?
All right, what else do you know about it? Nothing?
Just
that's
yes.
It? All right, cool. So the couple quick factoids about the movie are Ari Lehman, who portrays young Jason in the film, So the little boy Jason, he was a little boy at the time they filmed it, went on to start a band called First Jason. And they're a metal band which plays songs from Jason's perspective. And I actually listened to a few songs, and they're pretty rad if you like metal, so go give them a listen. Betsy Palmer only took on the role of Pamela Voorhees because her Mercedes broke down. She was not thrilled at the idea of taking on this role in this slasher movie, but took it because her car broke and she needed money to fix it. You're making a lot of faces. Do you have something to say?
It's just, like, a really specific... Like, she can afford a Mercedes, but she can't afford to repair her Mercedes?
I don't know.
That's
I imagine
special.
Mercedes repairs... Maybe she spent a ton of money, like, all of her money on the Mercedes and was like, oh, no, it's not working.
Did she buy a second-hand Mercedes?
I don't know. I don't know what...
I want to know more about the story of the Mercedes.
All right, well, maybe you can come back to part two with some answers about Betsy Palmer's Mercedes.
I will miss that.
Yeah, speaking of Betsy Palmer, she also slapped Adrian King on set to rehearse a scene because she said that's what they do in theater. Adrian King fell to the ground and cried for the director, and the director had to calmly explain to Betsy Palmer that in film, they don't actually slap each other. They miss on purpose.
I bet we'd have way better reactions, though, if they were actually out slapped.
Oh, I bet.
The cat really wants to be on this episode.
Cat really wants to step all over our recording device. Anyways, yeah, that's all I've got to say about Friday the 13th, Part 1. How scary do you think it's going to be?
I feel like this is going to be a ramp up from, like, Tremors and Carrie.
But I mean, people kept saying, like, oh, The Exorcist is going to be the scariest, and then we watched it, and you were like, yeah, whatever, so I don't know what to expect anymore.
But that's just because it was, like, the Catholic symbolism in The Exorcist. I was just being like, that's correct, that's not correct, I don't know, how many obscure Catholic references are in Friday the 13th?
None that I can think of. There's a lot of camp references.
It's the new goal is to try and find one.
One
Catholic reference.
Is that this kind of podcast? Are we a...
No, I just noticed in my admittedly limited horror movie experience, there's a lot of, like, drawing upon Catholicism specifically for these, like, spooky tropes.
That's because, like, demons, really. Demons in hell. Like, that gives you
that's
so much material
to
work with.
But that's what I mean. There's lots of, like, Catholic
Well, yeah. Things. I mean, every culture's got their own kind of idea of what a sort of, like, hell would look like.
I agree, but it tends to be the, like, Catholic hell. In
yeah, well, that's because Hollywood is in the USA.
Which is funny, because the USA hates Catholics.
It's true, they do, but they love hell and demons.
Also true.
Which we will find none of in this episode, so we're digressing a little bit. There's no hell, there's no demons, not until part 9 when Jason goes to hell.
What?
That doesn't happen.
Are we getting that far? Part
9. I honestly have no idea. Oh, I guess we'll see where the wind takes us. So anyways, we're going to go to Camp Crystal Lake, which is what it's called now. And we're going to, I don't know, do some boating, do some archery. And we'll be right back after we finish watching Friday the 13th, part 1. So we'll see you guys in a bit. Hang tight.
Summer camp, the idyllic land of cabins, maybe some wide games, campfire, and also murder.
And a really deep lake.
I don't think that's as unusual at summer camp as the murder, to be honest.
Right.
Although, I don't know. What? How often are people murdered at summer camp?
Well, according to horror films, a lot. I feel like we're going to be using this cold open back to the episode a lot, because we've got Sleepaway Camp and couple other Friday the 13th films. I don't know. We're going to have to come up with something more clever than we're back from camp. But
man, people found summer camp really traumatic as children.
Well, there was that really high-profile case where the two Girl Scouts were killed
while camping. I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's a real true crime thing. It upset everybody. As it should. Girl Scouts dying is upsetting.
Was this in the
70s? I believe so.
Is that why they made so many camp movies?
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure. I should have done research on it before we recorded this part, to be honest with you. But yeah, you people at home, Google, if you dare, Girl Scout murders, and I'm sure you'll come up with something, and you'll be like, oh yeah, yeah, that's why. So anyway, yeah, we just watched Friday the 13th, part 1.
Yeah, and it starts off with some shots of the moon rising over the dark camp.
Right. Before we get into it, we should specify that we watched the uncut version. So for anybody watching at home, if we say something that doesn't sound right, it could be that it's in the uncut version and not in the regular version. I noticed a few differences because I saw this film a long time ago when I was a kid, and I don't know what's different. I just know that there were scenes added. So, but I can't tell which ones are which, but I know that some were. So yeah, we're using the uncut version. And as always, we're going to be spoiling this movie. To high heaven. So if you want to watch it and then hear our commentary on it, then pause this and go watch it and then come back and hear us talk about it. But if you don't mind it being spoiled, then keep listening.
Yes. Anyways, it's nighttime. The campers are clearly all asleep and the counselors are in a cabin having a little Jesus sing-along.
Yeah, it's fun. And the two of the campers, the one playing the guitar and a guy sitting on the ground, are just like eye-banging the entire time. They're, like, singing about Jesus, but they're, like, oh, yeah, those eyes at each other. It's really unsubtle.
Right, and then they separate from the group and go find themselves a little attic.
Which is also so unsubtle. It's, like, 3 seconds after the Jesus sing-along, they get up, hold hands, and leave. And everybody's just, like, bye, bye. And I'm, like,
to be fair, there are other counselors who, like, have their arms around each other in that scene. And,
that's
like,
true.
It's also 57.
That's true, yeah.
So, anyways, they're getting it on in an attic, and then we start having the, like, I know it's not a GoPro, and I know you're
POV. Just say
calling
just
it a GoPro.
No, just say POV. It's point of view. It's all it is.
It's like a GoPro.
But no, it's not. It's not. It's point of view. It's POV.
Anyways.
People say Hardcore Henry was recorded with a GoPro, but the movie's POV. It's not
anyways,
GoPro.
Somebody going up the stairs after them, and there's a like, noise.
Oh man, that's definitely the Ferris Bueller sound.
I know, but I can't speak noise. The reason I remember it was a noise.
Sorry. Okay, no, it's
is the
Ferris Bueller sound. But now I want somebody to edit scenes and clips from Friday the 13th and to change those two sounds because that brings an entirely different connotation. I love it.
Anyways, our cat doesn't like that noise.
No.
Her ears twitch every time it was played.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, weird. It was a lot of, like, high-pitched, kind of trilly sort of music. I actually quite liked the original score. But, yeah, upsetting on someone's ears.
If you're a cat.
It's very high-pitched. Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, we get this POV person walking up the stairs, and the two camp counselors get off of one another and are like, oh, you know, we were just fooling around. Don't worry about it. So they're clearly talking to whoever this POV person is, and they're not, like, immediately horrified. It's not like, oh, God, don't kill me. They're just like, oh, we're just messing around. So it's clearly somebody they might know. And then he gets stabbed below the camera. We don't get to see it. It's just like he goes, huh! And then the next shot is him falling on the ground with a gut wound. And then we get a really weird sort of edited her screaming, and it gets slower and slower and slower. And then we get title card.
Yeah.
Smashing title card.
That was a lot earlier in the movie than I was expecting people to start dying.
Oh, yeah, immediately. Well, a lot of horror films kind of tend, especially slasher films, tend to kick off the film with a kill. Mm. Yeah.
Anyways.
In this case, two.
And then it cuts to Annie going through town.
Yeah.
Camp Crystal Lake.
It says present day, and I was like 2014? Nope, no, this is the 80s.
That's not even the right year we're in, babe.
2019.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. What year is it?
2019.
I've been trapped in Jumanji so long.
Anyways. and Annie walks into, like, a store. She's like, Zane, do you know the way to Camp Crystal Lake? And they're like, it's 20 miles. And then I wrote, small towns are so trusting. Because the lady behind the counter is just like, hey, why don't you drive Annie to the crossroads? And everyone's like, yep, seems reasonable. Not a problem.
One thing I also noticed in the bar was the moment she's like, I gotta go to Camp Crystal Lake. Everybody stares at her like she just said, like, I've gotta go marching right into hell. Because everybody's just like, oh my God. And I was thinking, like, if everybody knows, how is this camp still in business?
Yeah, the town calls it Camp Blood.
Yeah, how is it still in business? How do people still send that? But I guess if it's isolated to the town.
And it's been like 20 years.
Yeah, I guess by this point in the human history, people were shipping their kids far away for camp. Not necessarily from all the local places.
Yeah.
But it was still weird how, like, everybody reacts like, oh, that's the worst.
Yeah. And then we get a brief history in the truck of all the terrible things that have happened at Camp Crystal Lake.
Do we meet Fred before that, though? On the way to the truck? Crazy Fred? And he gives that really
weird...
His name
is Ralph.
Ralph? Is it Ralph?
It's Ralph. The drunk guy's like, don't go to Camp Crystal Lake, you're gonna die!
Yeah.
That's Ralph.
That's Ralph?
It's Ralph.
Okay.
I don't know who Fred is.
Fred's the guy with the sheep from Tremors. That's who he is.
Fred's already dead and not in this movie.
His decapitated head floats into the screen. No. Yeah, so they come across Ralph, and he gives the really weird line delivery. You'll never come back again. It's very, very weird.
Why was Ralph Swedish in that impression?
No, that's how he sounds. But he sounds Swedish in that particular line delivery. Go back and watch it. I guarantee if you go to YouTube and you Google, you'll never come back again, Friday the 13th, you'll get it. And I bet it's weird.
Uh-huh, I'm sure.
Anyway, this guy's the town crazy. She's told to just ignore him, but he's proselytizing her doom.
Yes. And then in the truck, guy's like, oh, somebody drowned in 57, and then two kids were murdered in 58.
And then there was a fire, and yeah.
Yeah, and Annie's like, it'll be fine.
Don't worry about it. Yeah, we learned that she's going to be the cook at the camp. That's going to be her job, is her and another girl are going to be the cooks.
Yes.
Yeah, and so he manages to take her partway, I guess, and drops her off.
He takes her to the crossroads at the Moravian Cemetery.
Yeah, he drops her off at a cemetery.
You don't see too many Moravian cemeteries anymore.
No, you don't.
Good old Moravians. I don't think we even have any Moravians in Alberta.
No, just Hutterites.
Those are not at all the same thing.
Okay. I don't know what a Moravian is. I'm sitting here nodding my head like, yep.
A group of Protestants.
Oh, okay.
Kind of are no longer popular.
Okay, and they got their own graveyards. That's nice for them. Yeah. So she gets dropped off in front of that graveyard, and it's very ominous, and she starts walking the rest of the way.
Yes, and then we cut to camp.
Yeah, back to camp. And I think this is where the versions kind of differ, because I seem to recall we get a little bit more of Annie before going back to the camp when I first watched it. Could be wrong, but I think they extended the Annie bit quite a bit. I think it went from being like 3 minutes to being quite long to give you a chance to get to know her a little bit. I could be wrong, though. So yeah, we cut back to camp, as you said.
Right, and we meet Alice and the owner, whose name I never did catch.
It's Mr. Christie.
Mr. Christie.
Makes good cookies. That's the only reason why I remembered it the entire time. Right. I mean, he's creepy, and not, he probably makes horrible cookies because he's so creepy. But.
Right, and he definitely has a crush on Alice, who, by all accounts, does appear to be, like, your standard 18-year-old girl.
Yeah, she's definitely not a mustache-wearing adult like he is.
And he's like, just stay till the end of the week.
I don't think he says it's quite so sultry, but he does.
That's what he's thinking when he says it.
That's totally implication, yeah, and he, like, strokes her hair. Because she needs to leave, I guess, to go back to California. I don't know if that's ever touched on why.
She says something to the effect of, like, there isn't, like, she's not loving the camp life, and she might go back to California to sort some things out instead.
I thought it was something along the lines of, like, somebody had passed away, and she needed to go see. Not just, this camp straight up sucks. I'm gonna go back to California and catch some waves, yo.
I don't know. The movie never really makes it clear.
No, and I don't think it needs to. It just needs, I don't even think it needs this kind of B-plot of her needing to maybe leave summer camp. Is that ever really important?
No. I think it just gives us a chance to be like, oh, that one is Alice.
Right, yeah. Name drop. Yeah.
And then we get a shot of our dear troublemaker Ned shooting an arrow like a foot away.
Oh, he's the freaking worst.
Up an archery
scene. So, yeah, Brenda setting up the archery range. And she's like 5 inches from the target, and he shoots at the target, which is...
so dangerous. Don't do that.
So dangerous. Even an Olympic-level, like, athlete would not shoot at an arrow jokingly that close to someone.
No.
And let alone this jackass guy. Yeah, anyways, Brenda's not very impressed because Ned almost kills her.
Right. And then we cut back to Annie. She's hitchhiking. She gets in a Jeep.
Yeah, she gets in another Jeep and is like, oh, thanks. And we see that the person in the truck, again, is our POV person.
Yes.
We don't get to see who the truck driver or the Jeep driver is.
Right, and they pass the Camp Crystal Lake turn off, and she's starting to be like, we can stop now.
Hey, you passed it. You passed it.
And then she jumps out of a moving car.
Yeah, after it starts speeding up, she starts, like, speeding up, and then Annie bails. And I pointed out that she actually bails and does, like, a somersault roll on the ground that's actually really quite good. I was like, oh, man, she knows her parkour.
Yes.
Well done.
And then she's hurt her leg, and she's running away into the forest. And I have in my notes, there's going to be a jump scare in the running away scene. She's going to run into him. And then my next note is, oh, called it, she ran into him.
Was it a jump scare? I thought it was just like, Annie eventually just like gets up against a tree and is like, no, as the person.
Well, it's like she's
up.
Running, and the music kind of calms down, and you're like, oh, she's safe. And then she like turns, and he's right there immediately.
Well, it's not a he. It's the POV. The
POV
person, yeah.
And she turns.
Our killer. Let's just call him our killer.
The killer is right there.
Yeah. And
so that's kind of a like, ugh.
Right. And then we get our first actually proper graphic kill of the movie, not just like a below the camera gut stab or a fade away into a title card where the knife gets brought up to Annie's throat and her throat just straight up gets slit and there's blood and it actually looks pretty good.
Although less bloody than I was expecting. I don't know if movies just make me expect throat wounds to be really bloody now, but.
Like on a scale of like a children's film, like a Disney film that needs to show a little bit of blood, or like the Addams Family, that one scene where they're reenacting Shakespeare and fencing at school.
Yeah.
And they hit each other and it's just blood everywhere.
Yes.
I love that scene.
It's great. That's how all Shakespeare should be reenacted.
It should be. There should be blood spraying everywhere.
Yes.
Anyway, so that's the end of poor Annie. And we go back to the camp to
to everybody, like, hanging out, setting the docks up.
Yeah, Marcy and Ralph and... oh, man, I called him Kevin Bacon. His name is Jack. Kevin Bacon's Jack. Yeah, Kevin Bacon's here, everybody. I forgot to say that the introduction scene to all the other characters, like, not Annie, as they're driving down the road in their car, there's this weird, like, Happy Times banjo. And I put down a note where I was like, you know, Kevin Bacon is clearly taking... like, he's coming from filming Tremors in this scene, and he's being followed by the Tremors soundtrack, because there's this crazy banjo music as they're, like, driving up to Camp Crystal Lake that just makes me want to square dance.
Yeah. Anyways, they're all swimming.
They're definitely not square dancing. Yeah, there's someone on the dock. They seem to be slacking off a bit, because I think they were told, because they're the counselors, and they're here before the campers arrive, like a couple weeks before the campers arrive.
Well, we see them first, like, getting all the docks in place.
Yeah, they're helping set up.
And then Ned appears to be drowning.
Right.
And, oh boy, everybody is so on board with saving man. Ned.
They were like, they must have just passed their lifeguarding course, because all of them immediately are, like, in the water.
There's two of them jumping into the water. There's two of them getting a canoe. Somebody else has a life preserver.
Somebody gets in a helicopter. No, I'm kidding. That doesn't happen. But.
They rescue Ned, and one of the girls starts giving him mouth to mouth, and then he starts kissing her, and this whole thing is an elaborate Ned prank.
And it's all Ned being a dick again. These are not pranks. Anybody listening that's like, ho-ho, that sounds pretty funny, don't do that to your friends. Don't do the arrow thing and don't pretend to drown.
Yeah.
That is not funny. That's horrible.
Yes.
The next horrible thing we see Ned do is some cultural appropriation.
Yes, but that's not yet.
Is it not yet?
No, the snake scene happens first.
Oh, right.
So, Alice is getting dressed in her pink bathrobe and spots a snake.
Snake!
Which isn't even a rattlesnake, and as far as I could discern, was not harmful in any way.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like a generic-ass green snake.
It looked to me like a garter snake, to be totally honest.
It could have been a garter snake.
It looked like a full-grown garter
snake. It looked like a really generic-looking snake.
Anyways, and she screams for Bill, and there's a really interesting use of lighting that makes Bill kind of a silhouette with the machete. So kind of like, he almost looks like the killer.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting parallel. Maybe, like, this is what you're expecting the killer to be, kind of.
Right.
Anyways, and he runs out, and I've noticed that every problem seems to necessitate a full response from the entire staff, because everybody else is very shortly in this cabin.
That's true. They're also ready for anything to happen.
Right. And they're all throwing things.
You know, that makes them really good camp counselors, if you think.
It's
like,
true.
Like, I bet if the kids actually, if they managed to survive this, and the kids actually showed up, that they'd have a pretty banging camp time.
It's
and
true.
These counselors would probably be really rad camp counselors.
It's true. Anyways, they're all screaming and throwing stuff at the snake, and then eventually Bill cuts its head off with a machete. Poor snake.
Right, and I think the internet tells me that's a real snake that they killed for the movie, which isn't good.
Poor snake.
But yeah, so they cut off the poor snake's head. So yeah, anybody that is upset by, like, real-life violence against animals, maybe skip that scene.
Yes.
Trust us, they sure kill that snake.
Yep, they kill it so dead. Poor snake. Anyways, and then our next scene is a cop shows up.
Yeah, he shows up and he starts asking if they've been smoking the Mary Jane, the Kush, the weed.
Colombian Gold.
Colombian Gold, that's my favorite one. Oh, man, I'm only exclusively going to start calling it Colombian Gold.
What
now.
Kind of anti-drug PSA is this cop living in there? Like, he's seven deads, he's like...
He writes them. He writes the anti-drug PSAs.
Yeah.
Which is really, really funny, because, of course, we live in Canada now, where marijuana has been legal for the last, like, year. Our cat is also...
Got some thoughts on marijuana.
It's not good for her.
No. She's never had any, don't worry.
No. That we know of. She had a past before we knew her. A rocky past.
A street cat.
Was she a street cat smoking the Colombian Gold?
I don't think her cat has ever smoked. I think no. She's too dumb to figure out how to do so.
Yes. Anyway, yeah, this cop's like, y'all on grass.
Anyways, and when he's done giving them the really weird anti-drug thing, he tells them that...
Oh, but I think
crazy.
As he pulls up, though, before he even espouses his anti-drug PSA, Ned's, like, running around in circles wearing this native headdress.
And underwear.
And in his underwear, doing, like, the screaming while slapping his hand over his mouth thing. And it's just... And he doesn't seem to have an audience. Like, nobody's around observing him while he's doing this. So I wonder what sort of weird stuff he just does when nobody's looking. Apparently that's it. But the cop shows up and he turns around and he's in his underwear and all crazy and goes, oh shit, and then the cop gets out. Anyway, we hate Ned. That's the moral of the story.
Anyways, the cop is here to be like, have any of y'all seen our town crazy?
Right, Ralph.
And they're all like, no, should we be worried? And he's like, maybe.
Yeah,
Ralph is normally harmless, but you never know with Ralph.
Yeah, that wily Ralph. Apparently he's got an alcohol problem, he tends to get drunk and
yes.
be a nuisance.
And then Jack, meanwhile, is like, I'm gonna go check out this police cruiser.
Yeah, and then the radio starts going. And
he, like, picks up the radio.
And Kevin Bacon Jack just picks it up like he's gonna answer it. I was like, what are you doing?
And the cop is like, no. And he leaves. And then, lo and behold... Ralph shows up.
He's just waiting for them in their larder.
And I just want to say, they're all warned about this crazy guy who potentially can be harmful, And then they all are just like, sup, Ralph? And Ralph's like, oh, you're all going to die. And they're like, that's nice, Ralph. And Ralph just goes on his way.
But it is weird because he steps out of their, like, pantry. Like, they're like, oh, man, I could really go for some tomato soup. And they open it up and Ralph's like, your tomato soup is expired. Also, you're doomed.
Right. And that's what I mean. Like, nobody responds to Ralph being
no,
doomed. They've literally just been told a dangerous man might be there.
It's very, very, very strange. And then he gets back on his bike while they're like, get out of here, Ralph. And he turns back and he's like, you're all going to die tonight. Right. And pedals away.
And then we see Ned.
And that's the last we see of Ralph.
Yes. And then we see Ned, who's also just heard this warning about a crazy, potentially harmful guy running around, and sees this mysterious shadow in a cabin who's not responding to anything he says and goes, better go into that cabin to see what it is.
And the entire time I'm like, I know that normally I'd be like, no, don't do that, that's dumb. But I was like, yes, Ned, yes. Go and see who's in the cabin. Go follow the creepy shadow.
Anyways, Ned dies off screen, his throat's cut, and he's tucked into a bed.
Yeah, and I was a little bummed, because I definitely wanted to see Ned die.
Yes.
I didn't want him to go off screen.
And then Jack and Marcy, is that her name?
Marcy, yeah.
And Jack and Marcy decide to sneak off to this cabin in the rain.
I think they're just out, and then it starts raining. Or the storm's approaching, though, and first they're sitting down, and Marcy goes, oh, I had a dream once when I was a kid where there was, like, it was raining and it was really, really loud and I couldn't, even if I covered my ears, I could hear the rain. And then the rain just turned to blood and it was awful. And it, of course it's raining and of course they're headed to a secluded cabin and of course they're probably going to meet their maker there. So I was just staring like, is she clairvoyant? Are we implying that Marcy prognosticated her death when she was a child? It was very, very weird and it's touched on again, which is very strange, but nothing comes of it.
Yes. Anyways.
They head into the cabin, and the other group is playing Strip Monopoly at this point.
Yes. And Jack and Marcy get it on in the same cabin that Ned's body is in, and I just want to know I want to know how you have sex in a room with a dead body 5 feet from you, and you don't, like, smell the blood,
He's in the bunk above him, and he was just recently killed. Blood doesn't smell that.
If you've ever been around a lot of blood, there's a distinctive smell.
I mean, maybe I just, well, yeah, old blood.
No, any blood. Like, if you get your throat cut, I guarantee you would notice that smell. You would not be a few feet under that body and be like, nothing there.
I've never... Weird. Okay. Anybody out there that wants to weigh in on this, do you smell blood? Do you not smell blood? What does blood smell like?
Are you implying I'm just a shark somehow?
It could be. Like, yeah.
Because when there are serious wounds, I do smell the blood.
Okay. If anybody else there also smells blood,
Tell us if they want to contact us. Where should they send their emails?
Oh, goodness gracious. We are thescaredycatspodcast@gmail.com, or you can just yak at us on Facebook.
Are we the Scaredy Cats Podcast?
We are the Scaredy Cats Podcast at gmail.com is what we are. I think. I'll clarify next episode. I should know this. Yes, send us, yak at us on Facebook.
It's just Scaredy Cats.
Yak at us on Facebook, talk to us on Instagram or whatever.
Yes.
Comment on YouTube.
Am I just a weird shark mutant?
Yeah.
Able to smell blood.
Or are there other weird shark mutants and should you guys start a band?
Anyways.
So yeah, there's this corpse above them in the above bunk. So they can't see it because the lights are also out at this point.
Yes,
they're not working.
So they have their sexy times.
Yeah, they get it on.
And then Marcy goes to clean up.
And I think throughout this entire, like, bacon sex scene, and we keep on swapping back to the other group, and they're in the main cabin. That's Deborah and Alice and Bill?
Brenda.
Oh, man. Deborah and Brenda. I don't know what it is with those names. We gotta watch movies that don't have either a Deborah or a Brenda in it, please.
Rhonda's.
And he does. Let's watch something.
Some 70s names. You just can't do the 70s
No,
names.
We gotta watch a modern movie.
All right.
They're playing Strip Monopoly in the main cabin. It's Brenda's idea. She wants to play Strip Monopoly. And the rule, how she explains it is very confusing to me because it's basically they still use money, but whenever you land on someone's property to pay rent, instead of paying money, you strip. But then is money only good for buying properties? Do you lose when you run out of clothes, or do you lose when you run out of money? I need more information.
I'm sure you could Google it and find rules to strip Monopoly somewhere on the internet.
But specifically Brenda's strip Monopoly. If not, then we should invent one that doesn't involve stripping, because I'm not really into those types of games. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyways, so Marcy's cleaning up, and Kevin Bacon is lying on the bed in his shirt, and he's smoking
post-coital,
a cigarette.
Post-coital, having a great time.
Having his post-coital cigarette.
Oh, yeah.
And then he looks kind of stunned, and an arrow shoots up through his...
Well, a hand comes up and grabs him by his forehead from underneath the bed. So it comes up and grabs him by his forehead, holding him to the bed. And yeah, an arrowhead just slowly kind of comes out of his throat, and there's blood.
And I just want to point out, the amount of blood in this kill is way more what I'm expecting when somebody's throat gets got than anybody who has their throat cut by a knife in this film.
Well, I mean, this kill is an arrow being pushed through someone's neck instead of just, like, the throat being slit. So I don't know which would end up bleeding ultimately more.
I don't know, but this is more the level of blood I'm expecting out of a throat wound.
Okay, so Vicky was disappointed by Alice's kill, and Vicky wanted more
Alice
blood.
Alice isn't dead.
Alice. Right, Annie. Vicky was disappointed by Annie's kill, wants to smell more blood. All right, moving along. So yes, Kevin Bacon bites the dust real early, unfortunately. He's our third kill of the movie.
Yes, and my next note is, I do not like the slow build to each death. It distresses me. So,
slow build?
There's like a solid minute before each kill happens where you know they're about to get killed.
Oh,
I don't like that.
Oh, you're going to...
I
gonna
don't
be a,
like that.
There's going to be a lot of that.
Oh, no.
There's going to be a lot of that. And there's going to be a lot of ones where it like flagrantly shows you that the person's walking into their own death and they are unaware and you just have to watch.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's going to happen a lot.
Anyways, Marcy starts getting creeped out, cleaning up. And she's like, Jack.
Right.
And she starts opening all the, like, shower cubicles.
Before then, when she's in the bathroom, she's talking in the mirror. I don't remember what the quote is, but she quotes Rainmaker, which is another movie about a con artist, I believe. But again, I'm like, clairvoyant? Or are you just quoting Rainmaker because it's raining outside? What's going on there? But anyways, yeah. Then she starts looking for Jack.
Yes. Anyways, she's opening up all the shower curtains. And then... she turns around, and you don't get to see what she sees. You just get a scream, and then she has an axe in her face.
Yeah.
A very well-done axe in her face.
It looks good. Looks good. That axe looks good in that face. Like it was meant to be.
No, it only looks good in the face, to be clear. I just think the practical effects are good.
No, like, that effect was meant to be. I think, I hope the actress didn't actually get an axe in her face.
I also hope the actress didn't get an axe in her face.
I'm pretty sure.
I feel like that would be grounds for a lawsuit.
I feel like this would be a very, very different... there'd be a different cult following behind this movie. If it did.
Hello, Cannibal Holocaust.
Yep. And then we cut back to the main group, and I think they've started to shut down for the night.
Yeah.
And they want to get the jet... or does the generator stop working at this point?
No, the generator's still going. But we do quickly get a scene of Mr. Christie, who's still out, which is weird, because he's like, I'll be back after lunch. And like, well, this is undoubtedly after
yeah,
lunch.
Yeah, he's a fucking liar.
Right. So... he starts on his way back.
That's okay. I'm okay. I was okay with less of him in the movie, to be honest.
Yes. It starts on his way back, and then he's on his way back, and his Jeep breaks down, and he gets, like, a ride from a cop.
Mm-hmm.
Which is...
the policeman.
Yeah, which is all well and good. And then we cut back to Brenda getting ready for bed.
And she hears, help me, outside.
But before that, as part of their counselor package, do they all get the same bathrobes? Because she's wearing the exact same bathrobe that Alice is wearing.
Maybe.
Or do you think the movie just didn't have the budget for two bathrobes?
So they just traded? Like, let's hope nobody notices.
Right, because it's literally the same bathrobe.
Well, I don't know. The movie was made for like $500,000. So I think they could have bought two distinctly different bathrobes if that was the case. So I think the implication here is that they're using supplies given by the camp. So
the camp does give out bathrobes.
Yes. I'm glad that we got to the bottom of that.
Interesting. Anyways... yeah, so Brenda hears, help me, help me.
Right, and it's distinctly a feminine voice.
Right, like, and so she goes running out in the pouring rain with her lantern. And she's in the archery range, and the lights all come on, and you're like, oh! And then it cuts away, and you're like, oh.
And you're like, oh, okay. All right.
Cool. And meanwhile, Alice and Bill, mostly Alice, are starting to be very like, don't like it. Don't like what's going on to you.
Yeah, they're like, they're looking around for everybody. They're like, where is everyone?
Right, and so they go and break the window into the office.
Well, I think specifically they decide to go to the archery range because Alice tells Bill that the lights were on. She's like, the lights were on in the archery range, and he goes, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why are the lights on? And she goes, I don't know. And they decide to go check it out. And
right.
Yeah.
And then they decide they need to call somebody, so they break into the office.
Right.
But then the phone wire has been cut.
Yes, and it was very cleverly shown to us, not them. So the camera moves up on the outside to show the wire is cut. The characters themselves, though, inside the house, just pick up the phone and go, oh, it's not working.
Right.
Instead of, like, the people randomly knowing that the line has been cut. Like, a teenager wouldn't know that,
yes,
right? And so it was good of the movie to show us that the line's been cut and have the people just say that the phone's not working.
Yeah. And then we cut back to Mr. Christie, and there's somebody waiting at the entrance, I guess, to Camp Crystal Lake, and he's like, oh, hi.
He's like, hi, you want some chocolate chip cookies?
And then he gets stabbed.
Yeah.
He
gets cut. Yeah. See, how does he die?
He's walking towards the POV camera.
Right, and it's almost like somebody punched him in the stomach and told him to look surprised.
Pretty much.
And, yeah.
So, yet another off-screen death.
Yeah, a lot of those in this movie. A lot more than I remember there being.
Yes, and at this point, Bill has gone to go fix the generator.
Yep.
And Alice is like, I'll just make him some coffee and take it out to him. And then...
Yeah, Alice being a sweetheart.
Right, and then my next note is this movie is really dark, which I understand because it's at night, but it also makes it really difficult to see the acting and stuff.
Yeah, there were a couple moments where I turned to Vicky and I was like, it's like the Battle for Winterfell.
Right. So, that was kind of a negative. Anyways, and so she goes to the generator room and she opens the door and Bill is stuck with arrows.
Yeah, because, well, she naps, I think. She, like, leaves her to nap in the cottage and then goes to fix the generator and she wakes up from the nap and then goes to see him. And, yeah, so she goes to the generator room, opens up the door, then closes it, and Bill's been pinned to the door by arrows.
I actually liked Bill. I felt bad about Bill.
I did feel bad for Bill, too. Bill's a decent guy.
Yes. Bill had the bloodiest death, incidentally.
Yes, oh, for sure. He looked pretty gnarled up on that there door. It was weird, though, because that death is what I thought we were going to get for Brenda. Because Brenda was on the archery range. Bill was not on the archery range, but Bill got killed by arrows.
Yeah.
Very weird.
Anyways, and so Alice suddenly realizes that she's in a terrible situation.
Uh-oh, this won't do at all.
And so she, like, throws a rope over a rafter and, like, ties it to the door.
Yeah, it's a pretty Rambo move, to reinforce that door. It's pretty smart.
Yeah, and she gets a bat and a carving fork, which is an interesting variety of weapons to choose. So she has her bat and her carving fork. And then a window breaks and Brenda's body gets tossed through the window.
All chained up, like she's...
Roped up.
Is it roped up?
There's no chains.
Okay, well, I just have a note that she looks like an escaped artist who failed to escape.
She got Bill's death and Bill got her death.
Yeah, it was very weird.
Yeah.
But now it's apparent now to poor Alice that she's in a spot of bother.
Yes. And then Betsy Palmer shows up.
Yeah, Betsy Palmer. In her nice, crisp, nice sweater.
She's by the gate with the Jeep, so Alice goes right into her and like, you have to get me out of here.
Right, and we as the viewers see the Jeep, and we know that Jeep belongs to the person that killed Annie at the beginning.
Right.
And we're like, oh shit.
Right. And then we have Betsy Palmer, who is the TLDR on her. She's the mother of Jason, who's the child who drowned in 1957 that... What's his name told us about in the truck at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and I was actually pretty impressed with how restrained the movie was for mentioning the kid that drowned, because it's really only mentioned by the guy in the car and by Pamela Voorhees later.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, I don't think they were expecting to set up a giant franchise like they ended up doing, but if they were from the start, then I would have thought that they'd be name-dropping Jason a lot more.
Yes.
But they don't. He's actually mentioned by name in this last kind of act, and mentioned... Not by name at the beginning of the film.
Right.
But yeah, so she's clearly, she's wearing a nice sweater. She looks very, very put together. She's very, very calm and motherly. She walks up and is like, oh no, don't worry. Tell me what's going on. Like, she's very, very right. pleasant, especially for poor Alice, who's just had a bad night.
Yes. And then as the conversation goes on, she starts to get a little more
crazy,
unhinged. To me, Betsy Palmer's performance was very convincing and was very reminiscent of Anthony Perkins in Psycho.
Mm.
There's very good, like, there's something off and you don't quite know what that is.
Right.
And then as that goes on, you get,
yeah,
oh, I see what's off.
And then when she goes full on, kill her, mommy, yes, Jason, I'll kill her for you. Get her, mommy! I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah, so, I don't know if she watched Psycho in preparation for this movie, but it felt very Anthony Perkins.
Well, Betsy Palmer's background was a lot of stage productions. Like I mentioned in part one, she actually did in a scene that comes up just after she starts to kind of unravel when her and Alice start fighting, because Alice realizes, oh man, you're the murderer. And Pamela Voorhees goes, yeah, I'm going to kill you now. And they start fighting. And she slaps her twice. Now, I mentioned in part one how she actually slapped her because she was like, this is what we do in stage. And they'd be like, no, 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 don't slap. Don't actually slap the actress, please.
It reminds me of that guy who played Gimli in Lord of the Rings.
John, yeah.
Where they'd always set it up and they'd be like, so here's where the stunt doubles are going to be. Try not to hit them.
Right. I'm going to hit you, and then I'm going to hit you, and then I'm going
to
hit you.
And they're like, that's fine. Just try not to actually hit us. And then he would hit all of them every single time. Yes. Anyways, we digress. They're basically, for the next several scenes, is kind of this cycle where, like, they tussle, Alice knocks out Pamela.
Yeah, gets the upper hand.
Some improvised, first it's her bat, and then it's, like, the butt of a rifle, and then it's a frying pan.
Yeah, it's sort of, honestly, it's a little lame, because it's very much like, it makes kind of sense because Pamela Voorhees is clearly not an imposing figure. She's not, you know, her 8-foot-tall hockey mask-wielding machete, like, supernatural force that is Jason Voorhees. She's just like this crazy old lady. So the third act of her fighting against Alice is a little lame because it's just basically these two not very intimidating people, which, I don't know, might make the violence a little bit more personal for people. Because it's a little bit less cartoonish and a little bit more realistic.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like you mentioned, it's like they're in one building, they're fighting, and then Alice manages to barely get the upper hand and knock Betsy Palmer to the ground. Then they move to another building, and the exact same thing happens. Then they move to another building, and the exact same thing happens.
But finally they have a struggle outside, and Alice gets her hands on a machete.
Yeah, the machete.
And then we get this, like, suddenly weird slow motion scene of her beheading Pamela.
Yeah, it's very similar to the very, very, very first scene with the lady in the 50s getting killed by Pamela Voorhees. It's very similar.
Although, I have some questions about Alice's strength, because it is not that easy to just knock off somebody's head with a single machete blow.
Well, you know, trauma and, like, stress are hell of a drug.
And they'll give you the power to behead someone in one swing?
Moms lift cars off of children. Why can't she behead Betsy Palmer?
I don't know. Anyways, Betsy Palmer's headless body stands there, like, making hand gestures for several seconds.
Yeah.
And then dies.
And then dies, yeah.
And then, for some reason, Alice gets in a canoe and canoes out to the middle of the lake and falls asleep.
It's really weird because she knows that there's a car. They know that Betsy Palmer's Jeep is there. And there's the other cars there that presumably are still there. But yeah, she gets on a canoe to go to the middle of the lake.
Yeah, and then it's very unclear how much of the canoe is a dream and how much is not, because these two cops show up and they're like, there's a lady.
Yeah, it's the next morning, and we get this kind of like peaceful shot of her all alone on the lake in her canoe, and these two policemen pull up on the, and we can't hear them, but they're clearly cupping their hands over their mouths, shouting at her.
Right.
But we can't hear them because we just get this pleasant music.
Right. Very Carrie-esque, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Like strings. Anyways, and then out of the lake comes grown-up drowned Jason?
I don't know. It's still child
weird,
Jason.
But his, like, clothes are, like, shredded. He's like the merman from hell.
Yeah.
Jason. It's not, like, a dude. It's like...
Okay. We get the real little mermaid.
Yeah, because, like, all the clothes are, like, super stringy, and his hair is, like, all in front of his face.
Yeah.
He's, like, kind of skeletal.
Yeah, and it's very... It just, like, breaks through the peaceful music, and there's, like, she gets grabbed off.
And then she wakes up and screaming in the hospital. It's very Carrie-esque.
It is very Carrie-esque. That entire ending scene, yeah.
It's very, like...
Well, I feel like we're going to start noticing a lot of... That's how those scenes tend to go, is there's the last fright, but just kidding, it's a dream, you're in the hospital, you're fine.
Weird.
Like, that's a thing that happens a lot.
Yeah, and then she wakes up and the doctors are like, it's okay, your parents are on their way, and she's like, oh, what are all the others? They're like, they're all dead. And she's like, what about the boy? And they're all like, what? What boy?
Yeah.
And she's like, the boy that pulled me into the lake. And they're like...
That seemed a little strange to me, because if she knows that that's... And I couldn't tell whether or not that was her not knowing if it was a dream or if that actually happened.
Yeah, it seemed... And see, that's the thing, is because the movie sets it up so the cops are there. So if it actually happened, they would have reported, hey, some weird skeletal merman from hell showed up and grabbed this girl into the lake. Like, you'd think that would be in the report. I don't know.
It was the 80s. Maybe they were both on a lot of cocaine and they were like, oh man, let's not talk about this.
But yeah, so it's unclear how much of that last bit is a dream and how much of it happens.
Yeah, and considering how sparsely Jason's name is used throughout the movie, it was a little strange to end on, what about the boy? The boy! Like, I would think she'd be more worried about her friends that all died, but I don't know.
Well, as you say, shock is a hell of a drug.
Shock's a hell of a drug, and who knows, maybe by that final scene they knew they were going to be making part two, so they wanted to, like, shoehorn in more...
Yeah, who knows. So
that's Friday the 13th, part one, in all of its campy 1980s quasi-launch the slasher genre glory.
Yes, so, scale of 1 to 10, how well made do you think the movie is?
For its time and considering its budget, I think I can settle solidly on a 6. It uses a lot of off-screen kills, which I don't like very much, but what they do have for practical effects are pretty good. The acting's not bad. The lighting, like you mentioned, is kind of problematic in parts. It can be tough to tell what's going on in those darker kind of scenes. Yeah, a 6. Solid 6. How about you? 1 to 10. How well made?
I'd give it a 5.
Yeah.
Largely because of issues with the lighting. Because if you can't see the movie, you can't judge how well it's made. So there's so many scenes that are so dark, I can't tell how the acting is. I can't tell what symbolism there is. Mm-hmm. Especially the scenes that are dark and it's raining. It's just, I just have no idea.
And for anybody at home that might be watching it on like maybe our screen just sucked, or maybe you adjusted the brightness to brightness the hell out of it and it was a lot better. We were just watching it on our TV. We didn't bother messing with any of the settings. So yeah. This is just default right out of the box, how it looked.
Which I think is the best way to watch them, because it's probably closest to what you'll see at the theater.
And that's how it's intended, right? Right. Yeah.
So scale of 1 to 10, how much did you enjoy this movie?
Surprisingly, not a lot. I think I'm going to give it a 5. I thought it was going to be a lot more fun to go down kind of memory lane and rewatch this movie that I remember from my childhood that launches this kind of franchise. But it's just sort of a basic... out-of-the-box slasher movie for me now. And I'm aware that it helped to establish a lot of the tropes that exist now, but, like, I've just seen so many movies like it before. But that doesn't mean that it was a drag. Like, I'll still probably watch it again in my lifetime at some point with somebody to show them kind of thing, but it's not the type of movie I think I'm going to seek out on my own again. So, yeah, 5.
I'm going to give it a 4.
Yeah.
Because I don't like horror movies. And because I was mostly just stressed for the whole movie. I was like, you're going to die, just stop, just... and that was just my experience with the film.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Scale of 1 to 10, how scary did you think it was?
Yeah, if you're afraid by, like, the loud music and the jump startles and the few practical effects that there were, then I think for me, I can give it a solid 3. It's in my opinion, I think it was more classically scary than either Carrie, The Exorcist, or Tremors. Sure, there's a ton of people that would bite my throat out about thinking that Friday the 13th Part 1 is scarier than The Exorcist, but I do think it is a little scarier. So, 3 for me.
I'm going to give it a 5.
Yeah.
Which is quite an escalation, I think, from any other score I've given on this podcast.
I think so.
Because it did scare me.
Yeah.
I was like... I was scared if I was just in a state of perpetual stress for, like, an hour.
Yeah. Okay, well, a lot of 5s across the board, then. Nice average score. Go watch it if you're interested in Jason Voorhees and the series, because it is the prologue to the entire Jason kind of insanity-filled Jason quintrilogy. It's long. It's like 10 movies. I don't know what you...
That's not a quintrilogy.
No, I know.
That would be a decology.
If you want to watch this Jason decology, then maybe go watch Friday the 13th Part 1, the prologue.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you're interested in us, then for our next episode, you can listen to us talk about Friday the 13th Part 2.
Yes, we are going to be going through probably not the whole decology. We'll probably stop once it gets silly, which will probably be surprisingly quick here.
Yes. Or we might do the first 2 episodes and then take a break and then do episode 3. We don't know yet, but we do know next episode we're gonna see Jason for the first time.
Yes, we're gonna see Bag Jason. So come and join us then when we go back to revisit Camp Crystal Lake. And just before we shut down, once again, I want to give a huge shout out to my brother Kyle Sopfett for sound editing this episode and writing the jingles. You can find his work at Ninja Kittens on YouTube and Ninja Kittens on Spotify. Go listen to him if you like the dance dance. So anyways, we'll see you guys next time, or hear you. We won't hear you. You'll hear us next time.
That's the order it goes.
All right. Take care. Be good people.